Dear colleagues, glad to see you all online. It's been 3 weeks of quite productive, I must say, but probably not much to show. But anyway, we had pretty interesting discussions and something that you can work on in the future. So, who is on the call? So now we have Alejandra, Ben, David, myself, Martin. Martin, didn't you say that you would not be able to participate? But I'm glad to see that you are here. Miljana and, oh, no, sorry, you won't be in February, I guess, right? Okay, so Miljana and Stephen. So the first one today is a guideline on the liaisons and observers. We haven't received any comments from council, but Martin worked hard on this one and spotted some things that were not covered. Then I distributed another version of the, not version, but some updates, and then Martin also added some comments to the document. Can we please scroll down a little bit? Yes, go down. So we have nothing new here. And okay, we have some changes here. As you can see, we have some comments, suggestions, and updates. Basically, here we used the same requirements or expectations from the liaison that were used in the latest, I think it was for liaison to ALAC, yes. Any particular comments on this one? I think actually, Martin, are you sure there's an advisory committee? Maybe they are advisory committees. Supporting organizations and advisory committees. So any comments on this one? No, nothing? Then let's scroll a little bit more down. Oh, no, actually, here's one question I asked. So if we aiming at those who are active at the CISO, should we send it to a relevant CCPLD community list or CCNSO mail list, members list, would suffice. So this is something if you think we should send to all CCPLDs in hope that a non-participating CCPLD eventually join the CCNSO. Yeah, we can leave the CCPLD community in our list. But if not, then perhaps it's just a CCNSO members list. Bart, please.
Yeah, my suggestion would be to send it to the broader list as, say, just to be clear that everybody is aware this is happening. As you may recall, some of the liaisons, it was a liaison. Patrick Miles was a liaison. He was not directly associated with a CCNSO member, but with a regional organization. And that worked well. So just to make people aware, it's just adding one more email address to the list and to seek their comment.
Okay. Martin.
Thanks, Katrina. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Excellent, thank you. I certainly took your comments, Christian, that the regional organisations are not officially members of the CCNSO. I think my big concern here is that while I think it highly unlikely in most cases that we will have anybody who is not a member of the CCNSO putting themselves forward as a liaison, it just seems to me slightly peculiar that the CCNSO should be looking more widely than its own membership for the person who represents them in the meetings of the councils or the bodies from the other supporting organisations or the advisory committees. That's why I put my hand up initially, and I must admit I would have expected that mail sent out to the CCNSO list would actually go to the regional organisations, quite simply because the regional organisations are formally liaisons with the council anyway. Sending out more widely, it seems to me that yes, it might be appropriate in some cases, but I'm struggling to think what that might actually be. Yes, it might be possible that something just doesn't, we're just not getting volunteers. But if we're not getting volunteers, that's presumably because the CCNSO membership do not consider it particularly important. That's why I suggest quite simply, when appropriate, which then allows the CCNSO council to say, well, in this particular case, we do think it is appropriate. To send them all out to CCTLD community mailing email list just seems to me, while easy to do, suggesting that the what I consider quite important role of liaison can be covered by somebody who perhaps has zero involvement in the CCNSO at all and therefore would not be in a good position to represent. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Bart, is it your old hand or you just...
No, this is a new one. This is a new one. First of all, just a correction. The regional organizations are subscribed to the council list by definition along the lines that Martin just alluded. Then we have non-com appointees to the council. So these are in principle council members, non-CCTLDs. And thirdly, I think, and that's, just for factual, say one of the more important representations of the CCNSO and broader CCTLD was are the co-chairs of the CCWG and on working groups, etc. CCTLD members, as long as they are, or even non-CCTLDs, as long as they have the support from non-CCNSO members or from CCTLDs, are allowed on working groups, etc. So it's more a matter of being, the fundamental question is whether you want to be inclusive or just representing the CCNSO membership. And in the case of liaison, it's a little bit broader than just the, the example of Patrick has shown. As just being a CCNSO member, because the regional organizations are not CCNSO member by definition, but are observers to the council, which is a different entity. Thank you.
Thank you. Martin, you want to respond?
Yes, if I may, and I will make this my last intervention on this point, because it seems to me that it is a fairly minor point. But certainly for the C representation on the CWG and the CCWG, those were people who were selected to represent the CCTLD community. They were chosen by the CCNSO, but it was actually made quite clear that these people should be, these positions should be open non-CCNSO members. They were not liaisons and observers, although both of those committees were open to observers. They were actually people who were put forward as working, but with a very much wider remit than just the CCNSO. And it just seems to me that in this particular case, we're talking about CCNSO liaisons and observers. The role of a CCNSO liaison or observer is to represent the CCNSO. And I'm quite happy to recognize the regional organizations as being actively involved in the work of the CCNSO and knowing what the CCNSO is doing and what the concerns of the CCNSO are. Going out and finding, in the very, I think, very, very unlikely case where somebody from, I don't know, South Georgia and the Sandwich Islands puts their name forward to attend as liaison or observer for the CCNSO, knowing absolutely nothing about the CCNSO, I start asking myself, why are we opening that particular door? Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Martin. I think that's a very valid point. And yes, you're absolutely right. That's supposed to represent and report back to the CCNSO Council and CCNS. Yes, it says, as Bart pointed out, it says relevance of CCNS and a broader CCTLD community, as you can see on the bottom of this page. Yeah, but anyway, this reporting, I think it's done mostly during the face-to-face meetings of the season itself. Okay, that's really not a very important point, even though I think to some extent it is, because it's important to state who we actually want to represent the season itself. Well, personally, I'm fine with Martin's argument and his addition, so we just left the CCNSO Council to decide where to look for liaisons. Okay, can we scroll a little bit down to another point that Martin raised? We omitted, didn't have this before that, removal of CCNSO liaisons. How can we remove them if we want, if we need to do it? So here we have now a new section, it's 5.3, removal, and use the same wording as from ARZAR guideline. I think I copied it from the ARZAR guidelines. So so far, that's what we have for liaisons and observers. No comments from the council, so I think we can send the updated guideline for public comment, 2 weeks of public comment soon. So any other suggestions? So, agree? Okay, so, good. Let's move to the next guideline on our list. It's Council Elections Guideline. Hope you had time to read it and see what we have. I've added some comments, sorry, only this morning. And so we'll have it. We have it in Google Docs. Yeah. Well, yes, there are many. Well, we will go through the text such. So. Probably some of these spellings and wordings something that we'll need to attend to a little bit later. So okay, something is not working at the moment, but it will in a couple of moments. I saw some other comments from Alejandra. Anything you'd like to say now or? We'll just wait for the guideline.
Well, not at the moment, but after this call or any other comments, I would like to review it with Bart and Joke and to see the dates that we should add to the election, because since we are trying to move it from what we currently do, I think it's appropriate to do so.
David, I see your hand is up.
Katrina, good morning. David McCauley here for the transcript. I noted that there may be a few typos, and I used the example of the word neither, and that was probably typing myself a little too quickly because I take it, and I'm new to this, but I take it that a council member from a region does not need to be from that region. Only the people who nominate need to be from the region. And so I may take back the comment that I just made about neither being an example of a typo and make that statement. I believe that's correct. I was just looking at the bylaws, and I was a little surprised by that, but having looked at the bylaws, I believe that a council member does not need to be from the region that that person represents, and so I'm asking if that's true. Thank you.
Well, theoretically, yes, but in practice, the person is always from the region. And actually, there are very heated discussions about the councillors, in what capacity they're serving on the council. I'd say they serve in their personal capacity, and they are selected by CCTLDs, CCTL members in that particular region for their personal qualities, not as representatives of the particular CCTLD they are working for. But that's really... that's always a very heated discussion. If a person leaves the CCTLD and is not employed by the CCTLD anymore, should this person remain as a councillor or step down? Yeah, but going back to the current version, I think let's... first agree on the content and then just do some editing and fixing typos. The content should go first. So, same question we started, we discussed the last time, and we agreed that let's stick to the current practice when we have elections in autumn, even though the bylaws clearly say that persons, councillors, shall take a seat in autumn. This is something, let's not go back to this discussion. This is something probably we should think about. The more I think, the more I come to the conclusion that probably we should change our current practice, because non-com councillors in any case take their seat in autumn. Maybe it would be good if all the new councillors took their seat in autumn. Okay, but that's probably not the most important thing. Okay, can we scroll down? A little bit, I have a couple of more comments there. First, body of the guideline, we definitely need some other titles there, and probably should restructure the entire section 3 to a bit more, several sections. Okay, about election, there are a couple of comments from Alejandra and myself there about the way elections are run. Let's go back. It says email election. Can you go? Back. Stop. 3.1, bullet point number 4, email election. We used to have email election, but I'm not sure we still have it. I think we click on a link, and then we have a website, and then we select the person, and then we vote. I wouldn't call it an email election. I think it's not email election anymore. Probably we should describe the current system, how we use it now. Then should we discuss this? Okay, Bart, please.
My understanding, because we haven't done a real voting yet, it's a bit of a combination. It's not web-based, definitely not web-based yet, because although we discussed it, currently we still use the a ballot system with emails going out with a number, etc. It's quite... it's a manual procedure involving email. So that's one. And I would say that something like the call for volunteers, nominations, etc., that's a little bit more web-based. So it's more, but more fundamentally, I would say that, for the procedure, either call it the voting or the election procedure and leave the technology aside, whether we use... a web-based form, or we use an email or a combination, etc. But just describe the procedure and let the mechanics be as they are.
Yeah, thanks, Bart. I definitely agree. It should be technologically neutral. You just say that there's election and... we make sure that we vote for a member and these votes are traceable. Okay, not traceable, but verifiable. Perhaps the right word. Rephrase this into a more neutral way. Next. Can we scroll a little bit down again? Some comment. It was it took me some time to understand what's written there, and I finally understood that perhaps because I was reading it just like date for call for nomination plus 3 weeks deadline to nominate. I proposed to have some shorter version for date for call for nomination, call it, for example, start date or whatever. Our Nate speakers might suggest something, and then rewrite it. We start with, for example, deadline to nominate and second candidate, and then start date plus 3 weeks. Otherwise, I think it's not easy to follow through this. I'm not sure if I'm clear enough, but But the way timelines are represented are not clear either. So it's just a proposal to make it a little bit clearer. Okay. Can we scroll down? We have several proposals from and comments from Jorge. So Jorge, Alejandra, as soon as you want to say something, please feel free to do it. Yeah, and here I already tried to make things simpler, but I think probably here we also could simplify, make it more plain English for others to understand. Who does what? The election manager sends an email with a call for volunteers to make it easier to read. And then I can we scroll down? And then I think that we also can I agree with the office proposal to have separate full name and CC to the region, just again to make things clearer. Self nominations. This is again something that needs to be discussed. Yeah, well, personally, I think we should exclude self-nominations, but I do not have any scientific explanations why I feel that way. So if others think that self-nominations should be included and allowed, we were not clear. Our guideline did not address this issue, and we had cases of self-nominations in the past, kind of self-nominations, yeah. But so our guideline wasn't clear about that. So I think we had, yeah, Martin, please.
Thanks, Katrina. Yes, I certainly remember us having quite a lot of discussions about whether they should be included or not. But you've just made mention of the fact that we have had them in the past. And I wonder whether, if we understood why we'd had them in the past, that might help us in what we say in 3.3.4. I can see possibilities where a deadline is there, no clear candidate has come up from the region, and one registry in that region thinks that, well, okay, rather than leave it empty, we put our name forward. The benefit of self-nomination versus the benefit of somebody having to go around and get support from other registries. You know, if people have submitted self-nominations before, then knowing why they did it or having some idea why they did it or whether there were special reasons for it might help us understand this particular thing. Personally, I have no problems with self-nominations, bearing in mind the next step will be to go for a vote, and one would expect a self-nomination to get seconded at some stage. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Bart?
So I recall one self-nomination, and that was at the when the CCNSO was created and the CCNSO was under scrutiny and it was not accepted, the self-nomination. And self-nomination is probably doable or feasible when you have a very limited numbers of members in a region, and that was the case at the time. And what we have right now, for example, in the North American region. So that was for, say, it's a practical issue, but to say the self-nomination in the past were, as far as I recall, say, in the, especially in the early days, were not accepted, and as far as I recall, they have not taken place. There has always been a nomination and then a secondment by another CCTLD. So not from the CCTLD, from the where the potential councillor is related to. But that being said, say there is no principle, say it's up to the working group whether they want to propose whether self-nomination would be feasible.
Okay, thank you. As Jokke reminds us, we've had this self-nomination even during the last round, during special special election. Jokke,
yeah, but
you
that one was as far. I agree. There was a self-nomination, but it wasn't accepted because of the rule. So in the past, there were self-nominations, but they were not accepted as such, because they did not pass the criteria for council elections. So that's the difference. So that's the real question, is whether you accept self-nominations or not. In the past, they were not accepted.
Okay, thank you, Bart, for the comment. Well, personally, I think that if you get somebody, some other CCTLD member apart from your own to nominate, and then the third one to second, it shows some level of support. And since we also accept, well, at least according to the bylaws, the way I understand it. So you don't have to be from that particular region. You don't even have to be CC employed by a CCTLD. So basically anyone can, if we allow self-nominations, then anyone will be able to self-nominate to be a little... might end up with loads of self-nominations. Or at least if it's self-nomination, then we must clearly say that it must be CCNSL member from a particular region, not just anyone from any place in the world. Okay, Alejandra, I see you have a comment, please.
Yes, Christina, regarding what you were saying, that you would have several self-nominations, it's up to the CCNSL members from the region to vote for them, so they can nominate themselves, but that doesn't mean that they will necessarily get through the process. And if people do not relate to them or do not know them, they won't vote for them. Okay.
No, that's absolutely true. They just do not vote. But do we really need to go into a mess in the first place? Okay, again, this is a thing that we need to think about, not necessarily make a decision at this point. Okay, then we have another advice from our election manager. Nice request going in. Okay, that was advice from elections manager. Then we have again something. Yeah, question from Alejandra, if really they can mark any number of candidates they favor. Again, maybe we should make it less or more technologically neutral. I'm not sure we can. I think there was a radio button, not a checkbox. Well, at least as I remember it. But maybe I don't remember it. Going back to what previous discussion we have in the chat window. Ben agrees that the self-nomination should be seconded by another CCTOD. Okay, let me make it clear, by another CCNSO member, of course, not another, but by a CCNSO member from that particular region, not just the CCTOD. So apparently, while I was talking to myself, we have some solution. The mechanism with self-nomination would be to have 2 seconders. And David thinks that probably somebody, self-nominator should not second themselves. Okay, we could propose some wording with 2 seconders, 2 people members from that particular region. Okay, then we have I think more or less we've reached the end of the guideline. Bart, please.
Yes, this is a bit of another topic, but goes back to the the councillor. So at one point, it's very clear from the bylaws that a councillor does not need to be associated with a CCTLD. They are elected on their personal in their personal capacity. However, and this became clear from the past, and we have seen 2 different ways of dealing with it. If a councillor changes affiliation during his or her membership, should that have an impact, yes or no? And then the question is, should that be in this guideline? I could imagine a situation that a councillor is elected being a representative from a CCTLD and for whatever reason leaves that CCTLD, and then the question is, what will happen with his or her councillorship? And that's not addressed to date. And I know there have been questions in the past.
Yes, absolutely. And if we publish this for public comments, this will definitely be something that we receive, definitely receive commented questions why they should address this. Yes, I agree, this is something that needs to be addressed and added to, well, I think another section covering. Actually, so should we also include something how people from a region can recall their councillors? We can recall our board.
Sorry, Katrina, I should have. Oh, this is my old hand. I should have put. Given the limited time frame that was, if you go back to the initial discussions around the bylaws that was excluded, however, given the new SOAC accountability, one could argue differently. At the same time, I think, and this goes back to the reason why it was not in a personal capacity, you one should be careful that a CC or a counselor is a representative of a particular CCTLD or a region. It's a little bit the same as with board members in that sense, is they're not on the council to push the interest of a particular region, but to share the concerns and interests of a particular region with the others. So that's probably the trade-off, say, when you want to include something like that the council can be removed by the CCTLDs from a region, and should you be able to remove the full council? Because that's the next step as well.
Okay, thank you. So let's include, definitely, we need to include how to call the a particular counselor, and then what to do, should address concerns, what to do when a counselor, does not represent the region anymore. Actually, this is a tricky thing. As we already discussed, you don't have to be employed by a CCTLD, and you don't have to be in that particular region to get nominated and seconded and to get on a council. So, but if you get on a council as a employee of a CCTLD, and if you leave employment, then all of a sudden people start doubting if you're still qualified enough to represent their interests. Yes, please.
This is like, I think it's more a, say, changing affiliation during the say term is more a principle change on the capacity that somebody is accepted as councillor, whether elected or elected as councillor. It is it is as if somebody would go from to a telecom operator, etc. So it's not associated.
Yeah.
Say people think he or she is associated with a CCTLD, and all of a sudden she is not anymore, or he is not anymore.
No, I absolutely agree with you. I'm just thinking about this. It must be fair to all the council. And now, just as you framed it, if a councillor changes. In any case, so it could trigger some reaction from the particular region. Okay, so which means that we perhaps need to add a section on who is eligible to be a councillor. This should be clearly stated, and what happens when a councillor changes affiliation, or there are any other substantial changes in counselors' behavior, for example, or something else. Okay, this is something that needs to be included. So probably let's do it this way. So, Alejandro, you started dealing with this guideline. Could you try to address the concerns we discussed today, and then I will try to add. I will think about some things around this, how to recall who is eligible to be, and things like that. Can we agree on that, Alejandra?
Yes, certainly. I can work on this guideline even today. Just wanted to know if we are going to change when we are doing the election. Have you agreed on that?
Well, we haven't agreed on that. think the majority of the GRC think that we should go with the current current setup when we have when we which basically does not show process as it is described in the bylaws, but well, I personally I think we should stick to what's said in the bylaws, and which means that we should move from the autumn to spring. But well, I'm not, I do not insist on that. It, I still believe we should stick to the bylaws. Or hopefully it won't come up during the review. We are doing that this way. I don't know, legally, is it okay that we do it like that?
Until now it has been.
I know.
ICANN Legal is very aware of it.
Oh, they are aware, okay.
So it,
and they don't mind.
The other thing is, and this is more a practical point, if you want to do it, there needs to be a kind of transitional arrangement included. And the major question is, do you want to push it out for 1.5 years or half a year? So there needs to be an adjustment of terms, that's one. And secondly, say very clear when the next election will be.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, of course, that's a very important thing. As to Alejandra's question, the timeline doesn't have to be, when we talk about timeline, plus 3 weeks, plus 5 weeks, plus 6 days, it's from the current, the date, start date, whatever it is. It won't change even if we change autumn to spring. But start date, yes, if we say it, must be clear in August or something, then of course it will mean that. Periods are important, I absolutely agree, and I see Alejandra has her hand up. Yes, please.
Yeah, thank you. And maybe, Christina, we can ask the council by email what do they think about this. Should we keep it the way it is? If not, what shall we do with current sentiment?
Yes, we will have to discuss it with the council. I'm just not sure we should offer the separate question. I think when they'll see the guidelines, it will be something that they should... they should discuss and agree on. Please unmute if you're talking.
Katrina? This is Bart.
Yes, no, I can hear you. Yep.
I'll assist you and Alejandra in preparing the document. But would it be, for the next call, an idea to include the different options so it's clearer from what we choose with respect to, for example, the changes in term, timing, etc. And then, when the working group agrees, send it to council to seek their comments and try to finish that part of the procedure process by the Copenhagen meeting so it can be presented to the community.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's a good way forward. Totally agree with that.
Yeah. Because, assuming you want to change the timing and everybody agrees, then you need to have that fundamental discussion in Copenhagen so people are very aware. Otherwise, we have a fallback that we start after the Copenhagen we need to start the election for the next council already. So the time window is fairly limited.
Yes, that's true. Yes. Well, either we started right after Copenhagen, and if we can manage to finish the guideline, or we can do it.
Otherwise it will be for the next council meeting. So not the upcoming one for fiscal year 18.
Yes.
But for fiscal year 19, then you have the ability to change it again.
Mm-hmm.
If you go for
definitely something to discuss with the council. But if you say that legally nobody objects, well, it also can work out just as it did before. I'm quite surprised that they are okay with that. But if they are, it's fine. Yeah, okay. But anyway, let's prepare these two options, maybe. Two options and one with two sub-options or something. Actually, there are two options and one option with sub-options, because one option is not to change and stick to what we're doing now. Another one is to change, and then if we change, then it's another question. Still a lot of things to do with this guideline. Next one, travel funding guideline. Well, I just went through it. I didn't have any comments to add to this. Apart from the fact that probably we will open discussions with ICANN and ask to increase number of slots, which leads me to a question: should we include the number in the guideline? Because if we succeed in getting more slots, we'll need to change it again. But yes.
Sorry, I'm still on mute. Yes, I'm back. I almost had another word in mind because I couldn't unmute. If you want to increase the number of slots, that request should be part of the public comment on the upcoming ops plan and budget. I've checked. That process will start in early March. So that could be not part of, say, the SOP. Working group normally looks at the operating plan and budget, but in this case it should be a request from the CCNSO Council as a separate council, as a separate comment. The reason is, say, in the past, increases were done through special budget requests, but because this will have a long and lasting impact, that procedure was... people did not use that, or people, ICANN staff doesn't accept the special budget request anymore for a systematic increase in travel funding slots. So, just for your information. As to the number, maybe put it in brackets at this time. It is a good thing when people know how many, and then it's documented somewhere, at least on the CCNSO website as well.
Okay, thanks for the update, Bart. Okay, any other comments on this guideline? If not, then probably we could send it to the... Okay, we still have some questions there to address, but we can send it to the council asking for initial input from them, and then if everything's fine, we can move forward. Yorke has a comment. Yes, please, Yorke.
Yeah, thank you, Katrina. This is Joke speaking. So there was one comment regarding the number of times that a traveler can receive funding per year. I will scroll down to the section where this was noted. It's the paragraph, the second paragraph on this page, where the last part is highlighted, where it says during the current calendar year. When you scroll down to number 7, the criteria, here it is mentioned that an applicant cannot be funded more than twice in the current fiscal year. So do we talk about calendar year, fiscal year? What do we refer to here?
Yes, well, first thing... Probably, oh, that's my opinion. We probably should not say not more than. So, which means that if we do not have any good candidates, or we haven't received applications from people who really contribute to the work of the season, so. I think we should not ban somebody from receiving travel funding just because he or she has already got two fundings. But we should not fund those who do not contribute. I know if you understand my point. I think that if somebody is contributing, we do not have any other worthy candidate, then we should not exclude that particular person from travel funding just because the person already received funding twice per year. That's one thing. Another thing, I think that, I personally agree with Martin's assessment with 12 months. 12 months seems reasonable. But I see Bart has a comment. Yes, Bart?
I would suggest fiscal year, as David and Ben already suggested. The reason is the number of slots, the season though, is able to assign is determined by ICANN's fiscal year. For example, if the council requests additional slots, it will change. That will have effect and will be impact the fiscal year 18 number of slots. And if council is of the opinion additional slots are needed, that will have impact in fiscal year 19. So that determines the number of slots, and hence a lot of other things included. Say there are 3 meetings per year.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. But we have 12 slots per meeting, right? If we use only 10 slots, we cannot allocate 2 slots to the next meeting and then have 14 slots.
That's true. But for fiscal year, say you got 12 slots, and say fiscal year 18 could be that you have 18 slots per meeting.
Mm-hmm.
That's the impact of the fiscal year. So first, these are two discussions. Say first of all, the number of slots you have, so that should be, and then secondly, the number of meetings is determined by the fiscal year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Martin.
Thanks, Katrina. I think what's concerning me about this discussion is that we're getting mixed up between criteria on a candidate and the admissive rules that we have to apply which includes obviously good and effective use of our budget. What I don't understand in this discussion is why we have to go and ask the candidates whether they have already been funded in the financial year. I would have thought that the administrative system would already tell us that, in which case we don't really need to have this as being something that the applicant needs to tell us. Among the criteria, the returning applicants fulfilled the requirements. Then applicant has not been funded more than I'm assuming that should be been funded more than twice in the current fiscal year, and that that feels to me like something very much more associated with the role that we want them to perform, which is why we're pushing to fund them. So if somebody is working on a project or on a program, has been actively involved in, and we want them back for the next CCNSO meeting, and then the next, and so perhaps three meetings in that one financial year, then that would seem to me to be something that we would wish to be able to bypass. But this, nevertheless, in my mind, seems a bit odd and arbitrary that you say that somebody can't be funded more than twice in the current financial year, but they could be funded, according to that, what that thing on the screen says at the moment, for the last meeting in the previous financial year, and then the first two meetings of this financial year, and that meets the criteria. And that seems to me to be completely crazy. Either you want them to attend or you don't. It feels to me that what we should be saying to the applicant is there's got to be a good reason why you're a serial applicant for travel funding. To some extent, it's up to you to justify that. Rather than us putting arbitrary number rules in at this stage. As soon as it gets to a particular defined clock starts on 1st of whatever month in the year and ends on the last day of that year, that just doesn't make sense to me at all, because it doesn't feel like it's now being related to what it is they want to do, what it is we want to do. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Martin. Any more comments on this? Let's just play with this guy a little bit more and have another look at it and propose some nice changes. But I really expect some more comments when we submit this guideline to the council. So. Next one, we included it as one of the agenda points, but we don't know if you would like to give an update, Stephen. Is there anything you'd like to highlight for the group?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Christine, as you know, I've been expanding my reading list a little bit, went back into the names function agreement and the services agreement, I'm working on an outline of the guideline for the board decision petition section, and I expect to circulate that outline early February and actually sit down and put a draft together, which I'll circulate to Ben and Jordan. I've been in touch with both of them on this topic. And that's about it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. So which means that we're swiftly moving to our next steps. And next steps, well, first I send the liaisons to public comments. Then there was one guideline we posted for public comments, and I forgot what it was, but I suspect we haven't received any comments on that one, which means that we can submit it to the council. Then we have the council election guideline, and we, I think, have some good ideas how to improve it, and have a travel funding guideline. And, of course, any support you can give to Stephen regarding his monumental work on empowered community, will be welcome. Is there any other business? Okay, apparently it looks like none. The next meeting is in 2 weeks, on February 13th. Yes, and Martin will be away without email or internet access. Jesus, is it even possible these days? So, yeah, your apology is recorded. Thank you. Hope you will enjoy your time without us. So it's, of course, it's 1 UTC. So, thank you very much, and see you all in 2 weeks and on the mailing list in between the meetings. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Katrina. Thanks all. Bye.